The Astros keep on rolling. 11 wins in their last 12. 8 wins in a row. Another long winning streak this season. In a year, they've already won 10 in a row. Justin Verlander allowed 2 hits and 1 run over 7 innings, striking out 9 as the Astros swept the Tigers with a 5-1 win yesterday. Seth, is it possible that Justin Verlander likes pitching in Detroit too much? Does he actually want to go back to Detroit? A rancid dump hole? I actually don't know that about Detroit. I hear Detroit's being turned up.
There was one guy at the very beginning up in the, I can't remember if it was right field or left field, that yelled, you suck. And Verlander heard it. Like, that was the one thing he heard. Like, Verlander said, like, okay, I probably shouldn't notice those kinds of things. It's always funny to me. It's so weird. Like, I like seeing those little glimpses of guys like Verlander being actual human beings. Like, no matter what he accomplishes or something, there's always going to be, every now and then he hears somebody yell, you suck. And he laughed it off, but still you notice it. You're like, what the hell?
Maybe it was an ironic, you suck.
You got a stadium full of people cheering for you and one bastard has to say you suck. I think he was. He probably got a laugh out of it. Yeah.
That's got to be a weird feeling if you're a Detroit Tigers fan and you're seeing Justin Verlander pitching for the Astros. He won a World Series immediately afterwards. He's pitching better than he pitched the last he was in Detroit as well.
And he mentioned that he's used to, you know, playing in front of packed crowds there. And this one was about 15,000 people. It was the most people that had been there during that series, and that was because of Justin Verlander. Right. And you could see why. But there's this guy on Twitter, Chris Castellani, that one of our listeners, Ty Garl sent me this video, because I've enjoyed this guy. He's a Detroit Tigers blogger, but who really likes the Astros. I was about to actually just plug this video indirectly to play, and then I'm glad I didn't, because he's basically said, for Verlander coming back and seeing the guys they were rolling out on the mound last night for the Tigers, it'd be kind of like going back and seeing your ex-girlfriend basically becoming the easy, giving it out to
standing
anybody
on
and everybody.
The corner.
Just, yeah, it turns into a complete skank. He did it in much more colorful language, but I couldn't.
Basically, watching your ex-girlfriend
turn into a skank is what he's seen out of his Detroit Tigers.
Man, that has to be tough in some way. Was it ever like that with the Texans where you looked back at the Jaguars and said, hey, like,
well, the first
yikes.
Year, the
or
first, that was the Jaguars were one of the teams we had success versus early. So we had Gary Walker, myself, and Tony Boselli all came over in the expansion draft. And then over the first couple of years, we ended up getting a few more former Jaguars, Zach Wieger, because the Jaguars just had horrible cap trouble. So they were unloading everybody. And it felt a little bit like that. Like, it was cool that was the one team we had success against. Part of the reason was that one of the reasons that we had success versus the Jaguars was because they never changed their O-line calls. Gary and I went back the first time we played, and we're like, these guys didn't change their calls. Like, I knew exactly what play was coming. It was crazy. Fred Taylor was irate. Fred, by midway through the second quarter, he got this look in his eyes, and he was so pissed. The offense, this is where I'll tell you sometimes, offensive coaches don't understand how smart defensive players are sometimes. They know more now. They understand it better. But there have been so many times in my life where I've gone up to, like, offensive line coaches on my team during a game and we're like, dude, you got it. You got to switch something up. They know the audible. They know the calls. Like, they can tell, like, which play is coming. And they kind of give you this blank look, like, well, what am I supposed to do about it? You just, you do something. You make, when you call out Ringo, you mean Lucky. Something simple and stupid.
People are so lazy.
So that's what happened. John Wade was the center for the Jaguars. And he told the offensive line coach, Mike Mazur, like, they know our calls. And he's like, they don't know your calls. We got dummy calls and everything. Like, I know what the dummy calls are. I know what the dummy calls are. I know what the calls are. I can tell when the guy's stance is, like, actually a pass stance, when he's trying to make it look like a pass stance. We just knew the Jaguars, and we kind of embarrassed them because of it. I feel bad because I feel like I was partly responsible for getting Coughlin ejected from Jacksonville, but it worked out for him.
Did work out for him very, very well. Seth Payne and Paul Gallant. It's Mad Radio, Sports Radio 610. The Bucks took a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals with a 108-100 win over the Toronto Raptors last night. Of all people, Brook Lopez, not Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak who led the way with 29 points and 11 rebounds. Seth, I don't know how much you play pickup basketball, but it annoys the hell out of me that Brook Lopez is all of a sudden bobbing threes and then doing Steph Curry wiggling after he hits them. You, sir, are supposed to go underneath the basket and get rebounds, you big man. And you know, when you play pickup basketball, this happens so much. The 6'6", 6'5" guy who is not that physical, the guy that I can kind of push around me, 5'11", 175 to 180 pounds or so, and he's sitting outside the three-point line just bombing. Bro, stand underneath the basket.
Right, but that's where, you know, Antetokounmpo just kind of, he does things. He does things. He affects teams and
he affects
their defense, and this is what happens.
Breaking news.
He creates moments like this for his teammates.
Brook Lopez, that surprised me, and he was the one that hit the icing three at the end of it. Meanwhile, Kevin Durant, he's not going to play game two of the Western Conference Finals. Portland, they're done. It's over. It's over, and they never had a shot. For anyone who thought Portland had a chance going into this series, I don't even care if Portland wins tonight. They still have no shot. Zero chance. They should just honestly give the Golden State Warriors the Western Conference title.
I saw that. Are Celtics fans getting angry over Antetokounmpo saying you can't go down 1-0?
Against the Raptors, but you can go down 1-0 against the Celtics.
Yeah. And he didn't even say that explicitly, but that was implied that you can get away with going down 1-0 versus the Celtics. Like, I don't think anybody actually could possibly get mad over that, but I think the media was trying to troll Celtics fans by putting that out.
They really don't like this team, the Celtics team. Celtics fans hate this Celtics team.
And the management doesn't like them. And just like all these guys, they don't like Kyrie Irving. That's what they don't like. Because you got various guys coming out and saying, well, you know, we'd have our game plan. We talk about it in practice. Then you get into the game and it's, oh, by the way, no, it's changed because we're going to leave Kyrie in. We're not actually going to do what we talked about in practice.
It really is something else, just the way that thing has devolved. But, yeah, that is a situation that is an absolute dumpster fire. So, Houston Rockets fans, hey, it's not quite that. Positive things. Seth Payne, Paul Gallant, Mad Radio. Okay, the New York Jets fired general manager Mike Maccagnan. Head coach Adam Gase is going to be the team's interim general manager. And this to me is very noteworthy, Seth, because I am still flabbergasted by NFL teams' staggering moves in their front office and in their coaching staff. Even though I've seen it happen before, like we've seen it happen here a couple of times, in fact, it just seems like it's not a thing you would want to do. Wouldn't you want to have alignment, if you will, immediately when you have a new head coach?
Well, I think in most cases, yes, but I guess in some cases you want there to be almost a healthy, if not distrust, but you want a healthy distance between your GM and a head coach, because there are going to be times where maybe the GM and the head coach are too tight or too simpatico to where you don't have differing views. You know, if somebody's agreeing all the time, if two people are agreeing all the time, one of those people is unnecessary. You know, like, so that's an old football saying, and it's definitely true. So I think sometimes, kind of like Abe Lincoln wanted a cabinet full of opponents, guys that disagreed with each other. I think maybe some owners feel that way. They want to have checks and balances. The interesting thing is that Mike Maccagnan had not been having a great run of it with the New York Jets. It's not like Mike Maccagnan had had, you know, like he hadn't had multiple opportunities to make it work. And it's curious that just now, for whatever reason, this was the offseason that Woody figured it out. I don't quite understand it, but I'd say that this at least is better than waiting an entire year. Because I think sometimes teams will get to this point in the offseason where they'll feel like, well, I'm not sure, but let's see where this goes. I'll give Woody Johnson credit for just pulling the Band-Aid off right now.
The Raiders did it last year.
Right.
With John Gruden and Reggie McKenzie, though I don't know how much power Reggie McKenzie actually had.
And that was not a comfortable situation.
No,
you
not
got
at all.
John Gruden basically undoing all of Reggie McKenzie's drafts, including the good ones. You know, think about being Reggie McKenzie and seeing Khalil Mack get traded away. And like that somehow, it's like a blotch on your record that you drafted Khalil Mack, but somehow it is. So how much time do you lose? How much time do you lose? How much ground do you not gain by not having somebody in there immediately?
I mean, ask the Houston Texans right now.
Yeah.
I mean, ask why they decided after the 2013 season to stick with Rick Smith as the general manager. And look, Rick Smith is not the worst general manager in the history of the NFL. Rick Smith got Deshaun Watson to the Houston Texans, which is very important as well. There are things along the way that he did that weren't so good, but when you look at the start of the Bill O'Brien era, I do think it is interesting that they had somebody from the old guard,
right,
as opposed to bringing in somebody entirely new
for 5 years.
And it took four years. But yeah, and it took 4 years for them finally to say, okay, well, we're going to get two guys that are on the same page. And it wasn't even entirely because they wanted two guys on the same page. You know, like for what we know, it's because Rick Smith's wife had cancer and he took the leave of absence. And unfortunately, she passed away.
Right.
Like, and that's what led to it. And it just was weird. And I wonder how far behind the eight ball the Texans theoretically are. Like, say, I'm not going to give Bill O'Brien too much credit here and say, like, oh, well, if Bill O'Brien had his guy from the get-go, like, the Texans would be in a much different position. But it is interesting to wonder, like, okay, well, where would they have been? Because they staggered things the way that they did.
For one, if you have Jimmy Garoppolo, I was about to say, if you have Jimmy Garoppolo, then you would have found out real quick what Bill O'Brien can do with quarterbacks. But realistically, that wouldn't necessarily have been the case because Jimmy Garoppolo would have been a second-round pick at best. So, maybe you take Jimmy Garoppolo with the first pick in the second round. That's not the kind of quarterback that gets a coach fired. But it would have been the best-case scenario. So do we think that Bill O'Brien wanted Jimmy Garoppolo? I know the people in New England thought that Bill O'Brien wanted Jimmy Garoppolo, but clearly Rick Smith didn't want to take him at any of the spots where they could have taken him.
It's like Italians.
Right. Yeah. But you probably would have found out a lot more early on. Like, I can't, as much as I want to, like, I can't blame Bill O'Brien for what he couldn't do with Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer, Brock Osweiler, all those guys. And you get bored of making excuses for him. And I don't want to, because now there are no excuses. You've got Deshaun Watson. You're either going to make it or you're not with Deshaun Watson. But you do have to look through those first several years through the prism of, oh, yeah, those are the three quarterbacks you had to work with. Although Brian Hoyer was kind of by design. Like, you wasted a year with Brian Hoyer, at least partly because Bill O'Brien thinks that anybody that has any kind of relationship with the New England program is somehow going to be yards ahead of everybody else. And that's why and you talk yourself into Brian Hoyer. But it's still Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Remember people telling us, like, oh, yeah, you're going to win 10, 11 games with Brian Hoyer. You got to. It'll be nothing. It's a path to glory from right here.
You know, there have been a couple of times, Seth, where my gut feeling on quarterbacks, like, I've gone against it. And it's been with this team. And I don't know what it is, but it has happened twice. It happened first off. It happened with I talked myself into Brian Hoyer after a bit. I talked myself into him. You know, I was like,
in Cleveland, before the offensive line and half the team got injured, Hoyer looked good.
But sometimes, Seth, I simplistically will look at one game and I'm like, nope, don't want him.
Yeah.
And that Cleveland Browns-Texans game in 2014 where Ryan Mallett came in, and Ryan Mallett actually looked adequate in that game. Brian Hoyer threw like 40 incompletions.
Yeah.
He was horrible in that game, and I thought to myself, nope. Absolutely no way do I want this guy in next season. I am all aboard the Ryan Mallett train for 2015 if he's healthy. Good God, I actually talked myself into that too. But whatever, that's besides the point. Wait, he hadn't showed up late to stuff yet.
Mallett, it was so, when it, on the rare instances where he actually threw the ball accurately, it looked so pretty and looked so good. Except that when he threw it accurately with no touch on it.
Oh,
and
boy.
It would almost put a hole through people's torsos.
Laser. Yeah. Laser. Pew, 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 pew. Yeah, he was just like drilling holes through guys' hands.
But when it did look good, it looked so beautiful that you couldn't help but imagine what it might be.
I never have fully talked myself into Ryan Mallett, but I did ultimately talk myself into Brian Hoyer. Even though that game against the Texans where he was with the Browns, I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I started talking myself into Brock Osweiler. I remember I was like, this is a solid risk when they brought in Brock Osweiler. And then over time, I was like, oh, you know what? Look at what he's doing. Look at what he's doing in preseason game number 3, the most important preseason game. And then,
Let's see. Somebody says, but I thought he was the QB whisperer. There's a thing about that take. Nobody has said that for a long, long time.
It's been a while.
It's been a long time. Every now and then in the national media, somebody will pop up and be like, you know, people call Bill O'Brien a quarterback whisperer. I'm like, no, they don't. They don't. They thought that he might be when he came here, and he just hasn't shown that he is. And that's pretty much all that there is to it. And again, is it okay? Is it because he's had to work with various guys? People claim that Ryan Fitzpatrick had his best year here with the Texans. Take out that Tennessee game and tell me what his numbers looked like. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick got benched in the year that was supposedly his best year. Ryan Fitzpatrick got benched and then cited watching Ryan Mallett play as a reason for his improvement when he came back. Like, that was not Ryan Fitzpatrick's best year as a football player.
No, it was not, no. And that 6-touchdown game was something else, too, because then all of a sudden people were like, yeah! It's like, no, this is what Ryan Fitzpatrick does!
Yeah, I know.
How Ryan Fitzpatrick continues to get jobs!
I guess he was running with the starters in Miami the other day, and he one of his first completions was thrown into triple coverage.
Yeah!
And it's exactly that. That's like the classic, the Ryan Fitzpatrick successful game. You go back and you watch it, and you're like, oh, wow, that was an awesome game that could have had 5 picks easily.
Right. He's really likable. Look, and we got down this rabbit hole because the Jets fired Mike Maccagnan. Adam Gase is going to be their interim general manager. Now, Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network is apparently under consideration for the gig. And I think this is noteworthy because Mike Mayock also this offseason got the Raiders general manager job. And he's a guy that's been analyzing personnel moves and drafts and things like that for a long period of time. This is weird.
Well, Jeremiah, though, was a scout for a long time.
He was, too. That's true,
so
yes.
So that makes more sense.
Baltimore, correct?
And he was a scout with a team that scouts really well, and he got his media gig and kind of ran with it, and I don't know how many years he spent as a scout, but I think he's about my age, so it was a good chunk of time. So he knows the business. Now, he was a scout. He wasn't a classic front office guy that was involved with transactions and everything. That's why I'm always curious about with like Mayock getting that job all of a sudden. You go from being an analyst on television to actually hiring and firing people and having to deal with the salary cap and all that. Like it's a completely different job. It's not just evaluating people.
Right. It seems like there's a lot of upper management things that have nothing to do with football that are involved in the gig. Now, I haven't had the job, obviously, but that's what I would think it would.
You know what's interesting? Involved. And I didn't realize this about Mayock until I had that same opinion, and then I started looking into Mayock's background. He was in commercial real estate before he got into the media. So he had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Very little time, but he played in college, then played for a small amount of time in the NFL. But then he was in commercial real estate. And commercial real estate is all about, it's not just negotiating. It's like both sides doing genuine, like, hey, let's find out a way to make this deal work. So it's like in commercial real estate, you don't find a lot of people trying to screw the other guy over in a deal. It's like, all right, let's find a way to creatively make this deal work for both sides, which is what you have in the NFL a lot of times with trades, with working with agents, all those things. So he has that business experience more so than a lot of guys that get elevated from scout to GM. So that part of it's going to be interesting to watch in Oakland. Daniel Jeremiah, I'll say I like him personally. I think he's very level-headed and extremely intelligent, and he knows everybody. Like he knows everybody in the league, and he's been in a position over these last few years, because he's a national media member, where guys from every team in the league have probably divulged things that they wouldn't have divulged
Definitely.
To anybody else.
That's a great point.
So Daniel Jeremiah knows things about players on other teams that no other GM would know. Because guys are trying to get their name out there. They talk to Daniel Jeremiah, and then there you go.
So this might not be a disaster for the Jets.
I don't think so. I think it might actually be, in a weird way, an unconventional move that injects a little bit of sanity into the Jets organization.
We'll keep an eye on if they actually do bring in Daniel Jeremiah as their general manager. Seth Payne and Paul Gallant. Mike Meltzer is off at his Mad Radio on Sports Radio 610. Okay, 2017, that was the marriage for the Houston Astros. 2018 was the honeymoon. I'm curious as to what the expectations are the rest of this season for that team. And it was going to lead us into a conversation just about the mindset of Houston sports fans. Some audio from John Lopez on that as well. It is Mad Radio.